You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this March 27th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a beautiful Friday afternoon here in the Auburn and Opelika area. Didn't look like it this morning, but it has become very nice today. I believe the weekend is supposed to be nice weather as well. And perfect baseball weather for there not to be baseball in Auburn, but that's okay. It's got some high school baseball going on, which is good enough for us. But, man, we got a busy show for you today between basketball, football, baseball, you name it, we got it. We're going to cover it over the next 2 hours. Christian, happy Friday to you, sir.
Very happy Friday. Man, looking forward to what is going to be a very, very fun weekend on the high school side of things, which you mentioned. We'll hit that throughout the show where you need to be all weekend long. Again, that Radio Alabama app will be your best friend. You can listen to us there every single day. You can also listen to 96.3 W Lee, also Tiger Country 104.5 for all of your fix of Auburn High School baseball, Lee Scott baseball, our show, also Wings 94.3 if you want to listen to the game in Tuscaloosa, the series in Tuscaloosa. But looking forward to a very, very fun weekend. You mentioned it, a beautiful day. We're both heading over to our respective ballparks here in just a little bit. Should be a whole lot of fun, and what better way to start off the weekend with a couple of big wins.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So phone lines are open here in all of hour number one. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. The number again, 334-321-1390 is the call-in number. If you want to be a part of the show, talk about the Sweet 16 yesterday, talk about the Sweet 16 tonight, baseball, anything on your mind, you can certainly give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And this is completely off topic and random, and you're not prepared
for
the question.
To start a Friday, what?
Yeah, that I'm about to ask you. How do you feel about there being referee Hall of Fames?
Is there context or just...
No. Should there be a Hall of Fame for officials or referees at any level of any sport, whether it be NBA officials or high school football officials or whatever? Should there be a Hall of Fame for referees?
Yeah, I mean, I want to go watch and be able to touch the jersey that whoever called Game 7 of the 2031 NBA Finals. I mean, I want to touch the cloth that was worn. I mean, I do think there should be a level of respect and a level of, especially at the officiating level where it's so difficult to find any officiating now, much less quality officiating at levels that desire and are in need of quality officiating. I mean, I guess I want to push back, but I'm pushing back with my own thoughts because I'm a big fan of when you have all those baseball games that have the official umpire tracks and it shows the 98% or the 99%. And so I feel like things like that after years and years should be rewarded, but maybe a big old Hall of Fame is a little bit extreme.
At.
I mean, you were the best fast food cashier this side of the Mississippi, the best that we have ever seen.
I mean, the argument is kind of like, you did your job, right? But at the same time, so did Michael Jordan.
Right.
He did his job.
His job was to score and be a good basketball player.
And he was a pretty damn good one. So, I don't know. That, no context. There is. I just won't say it. But, I don't know. I just, that kind of hit me, and I was like,
Did Angel Hernandez get into the Hall of Fame?
No. Pat Adams did.
Okay.
Yeah. No. No, I'm kidding. That's not. I'm kidding. That's not. No, that's not actually it. No, I'm kidding.
I thought that was why you didn't want to dive into the context.
No, I'm kidding. There is context, but it's not that. No, thank God that he's not in it yet. Speaking of Pat Adams, his connection to college basketball, and now the Sweet 16. I got there. Don't worry. Sweet 16 last night. Two games were awesome. Two games were not. I would like to talk about the ones that were to start the show, because the NCAA tournament, we're going to talk about this coming up in our next segment. The tournament might be in trouble of what we once thought it to be, right? Cinderella's upsets, drama, right? And there's a stat that says just that. But last night's Sweet 16, at least two of the games with Purdue versus Texas and Iowa versus Nebraska, those two games saved the tournament so far. They might have been two of the best games we have seen so far in the NCAA tournament. It sucks that they were both happening at the exact same time. Literally, both games were counting down the clock under a minute to play, and I'm just going, oh. One back, or the other, to the other, like ping pong.
Like ping pong or tennis?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't keep up, right? It was, oh my God, this one's at 2 minutes. Okay, let's look at this one. They just called a timeout.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, 58 seconds. They called a timeout. Okay, let's go back over. Dude, it was crazy to watch it.
And it was a crime that we talked about it yesterday, that they have it that way and not where one sets up to get going when it's halftime of the other one. But Iowa, Nebraska finished before Texas and Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
The game that started 20 minutes after the other finished before you could conclude Purdue and Texas.
The replay monitor was the reason for Purdue and Texas taking so long. They went and reviewed several things. Important calls, yes, but my goodness, how awesome were these two games. Purdue takes down Texas 79-77. Iowa comes all the way back and beats Nebraska 77-71. Which one do you want to start with? They're both awesome. They're both historical. They both have their nuggets and their stats and their facts. You tell me. We'll start whichever one, because I'm fascinated by both of these
games.
I mean,
we'll go in true chronological order based off of the tips starting times with Texas and Purdue getting things going. Did we not predict this to a T?
Yeah, Texas?
This was the game that, my goodness, we said that Texas was going to do everything just to hang around and hang around and hang around and have their push. And by golly, did they have three or four of them in there, one of them in the final minute. Tremont Mark absolutely goes off. Texas has every chance, including an and one with 15 or whatever it was seconds to play. Was it a hook and hold? Was it an over the back? That's a lot of controversy going on right now from Trey Kaufman Wren. Or was it just
bully
ball down low of, we're not going to blow our whistle in this context, in this form, and let it either be an offensive foul or free throws?
Yeah.
Because it may have been that a little bit before, but I don't feel like it necessarily had a major impact when the ball was in the air. And it looked like Trey Kaufman Wren just kind of played bully ball down low.
Well, TKR had been selling fouls all night long. I mean, he had turned into Mark Sears in terms of drawing fouls on some that were, some that were not. But man, tip your cap to that Texas basketball team. Tip your cap to Coach Miller. Tip your cap to Jordan Pope, Daylon Swain, Tremont Mark. Mark got hurt. He played on an injury. Did you see the update on Jordan Pope? Did you see what happened in this game? He was hurt too. He played this game with a broken foot.
Yeah, he injured it against Gonzaga, and it was not a hairline fracture or I injured my pinky toe. He said it was a clean break.
He broke it with 5 minutes to go against Gonzaga and played the entire game completely broken. Tremont Mark screwed his foot up early in this game. He continued to play, hobbling up and down the floor. Dalen Swain showed that he will go down as one of the best players ever to come through the SEC, at least from a talent perspective. And there was Texas, man. Their problem was Camden Heidi and Vokatidis both in foul trouble. Heidi fouled out. Vokatidis was just non-threatening defensively, or I guess he couldn't defend because he had four fouls down the stretch. And I'll tell you what, I can't figure out why, but Oscar Clough plays his position so well for Purdue, and he went after Vokatidis when he got into foul trouble. Mm-hmm. He played well. TKR played well. Braden Smith had the ball in his hands every single time down the floor, down the stretch. Fletcher Lawyer had a big 18 points, 4 of 8 from downtown. They started cold, and they figured it out because of Fletcher Lawyer from deep. He was the only Purdue Boilermaker to make a three-pointer last night. And Texas had their chances, man. They just ran out of gas. They just ran out of gas. A Texas team and program is in very good hands.
Very, very much so. We've talked about it, and we made the comments that Will Wade talked about with NC State, and funny how that transpired. But he said that this will be the worst team that we ever have here at NC State. Feel like Sean Miller could go and say that exact same thing about Texas. If there's any sort of true investment into Texas basketball, I mean, just call up Kevin Durant and ask him. But if there is a true investment, and credit to him, as I know Sark was in the stands, they showed him multiple times, and if he can be a voucher for Sean Miller and that program, I mean, this Texas basketball team is going to be right where they are in football and in baseball, atop the SEC. Coach K had a quote, I believe it was earlier this afternoon, about the best way to stop a player in March Madness is to get him in foul trouble, and that is what Purdue was able to do with their big men and with what a couple of their guys, you mentioned TKR, selling a couple of fouls, Oscar Clough playing really well, just eating up the paint. They did a really nice job to where they didn't have success early, but you continue to go inside, almost like old school SEC football of, okay, we're getting 2 yards a carry right now, but that's going to translate to 5 and 6 yards a carry in the fourth quarter. It's kind of what Purdue did. Got enough fouls to where you couldn't be very, very physical if you were Texas. But again, so many opportunities, and TKR with a tip in, essentially at the buzzer.
Falling down, too.
And Purdue wins at 79-77. I think it's safe to say that we know this Texas team a little bit. We also know the Purdue team a little bit.
Yeah.
Because this was the game that, if there was one we felt the most confident in just dialing up, I think it was this one.
Yeah, and they always say in moments like that and in games like that in college basketball, it's normally not the first shot that beats you, right? It's always that offensive rebound, the putback, the kick out for three, right? You see it in March all the time, and that's what it was, as Braden Smith missed the bank shot off the right-hand side, but there was TKR, tip it in, and that was it. That was all she wrote. And so at the exact same time as that one was going on, you had a Big Ten battle going on between Iowa and Nebraska. And while we may have been right about Texas, I continue to be wrong about Iowa. And I think I am discounting, or I have been discounting, I will not do it anymore, on just how good Ben McCollum is as a head coach. That dude is unbelievable. That guy is an animal. And
also an analyst. When you look at X's and O's, it's better than just about everybody we've seen.
That was such a good hire for Iowa that nobody talked about. He was in the running for several other big jobs. Indiana was in that mix, I know. And the fact that Iowa got him is fascinating to me. And I just thought Iowa didn't have it. I thought Nebraska was the better team. I still think there's an argument that they might be the better team. They're not better coached, and they don't have the better coach, I can tell you that. Nebraska led this basketball game for 38 minutes. From the opening tip to the two-minute mark, Nebraska held a lead the entire time. Iowa took it from them and never gave it back.
And you could feel it. You almost talk about the slow bleed. It wasn't even a slow bleed. It was just a slow Scotty Scheffler Sunday of birdie on one, par on two.
Yeah, he's seven back to start the day.
Birdie on three. Lips out for eagle. Birdie on four. Just cruising right along. And all of a sudden, hole 15, hole 16 gets here. And you can feel the energy.
Yep.
And you don't want to look over at that scoreboard, but you know what's happening. He puts one in the fairway on 17. You put one in the water on 15. And the place erupts and you can feel it. What a great analogy that was. That was Iowa right here in this basketball game. Nebraska scores 25 points in the second half. And you could just feel it from about the 12-minute mark. There wasn't necessarily a giant run or a quick run, but it was just a couple of buckets and a couple of stops, then a couple of droughts, and then another bucket. And credit to Iowa. Man, my goodness. We talked about Bennett Sturts and what he's been able to do as the point guard who played all 40 minutes in this basketball game. Went 7 of 15, 3 of 9 from deep. But you look at what they did from the bench. You had a guy with 16. You had a guy with 19.
38 total points.
Yep. Bench points for this team on what? 12, 13 of 22 shooting. I would say that's pretty solid from your bench pieces, 10 rebounds in there as well. If I told you that Nebraska made 13 threes and out-rebounded Iowa by 9, you'd probably tell me that Nebraska wins the basketball game.
In blowout fashion like I predicted.
But then you go look at what Iowa was able to do, shooting 43% from behind the line, also 52% from the floor, and only turning the ball over 5 times. It's a recipe for success. And Iowa moves on. Maybe we need to copy and paste our predictions for what tomorrow's game will look like.
Yeah, I mean, again, credit to Iowa, dude. Ben McCollum is a great coach, and Iowa is a historic program, obviously. They are not to the level of a blue blood by any means, but they have a rich history. They have not been this far in a long, long time. We talked Bennett Sturts. You mentioned him. How about this stat? Iowa has played 3 NCAA tournament games, 40 minutes a game, 120 total minutes so far of basketball that Iowa has played. Of the 120 minutes, would you like to know how many of those Bennett Sturts has played?
120.
120. He has not come off the floor in 3 straight games for Iowa in the NCAA tournament. As their starting point guard, in 120 minutes of action against Clemson, Florida, and Nebraska, would you like to know how many turnovers he has in 120 straight minutes of college basketball in the NCAA tournament?
Less than 3.
He has 1. 1 turnover.
With, hold on, 11 assists, now that I'm pulling it up.
Correct.
Holy cow.
11 assists, 1 turnover. He has 20, 13, and 16 total points in each of those games. That's ridiculous for a guy that is playing that amount of minutes against that level of competition. Clemson's a good defensive team. Florida, obviously a good defensive team. Nebraska, not so much, but I don't care if you're playing at the rec, man. You only turned it over 1 time in 120 straight minutes. The guy has not taken a break. He has played every minute of every game in the NCAA tournament. Has Bennett Sturts. That's insane. And you look back to the Big Ten tournament, he took 1 minute off each game in both of those, against Ohio State and against Maryland. Look at the minute numbers for this guy. 39 minutes, 39 minutes, 45 against Nebraska in the regular season finale in overtime. He played every minute there. 40, 40, 39, 40, 40, 38. Good Lord. The fewest amount of minutes he's played this season in
Here
a game.
Go. I just did it. I've been doing numbers the entire time. Against Power 4 opponents, he has not played in 38 minutes all season long.
Good Lord.
And one of those against UCLA, he didn't play in 6 of them, and Minnesota didn't play in 11 of them.
That's ridiculous.
So that
dude.
Is 17 minutes between those two games, and even Illinois the first time, where he played 33. You take those 3 games out, what, 38 minus 7, 31, minus 11 is 20, and minus 6 is 14. So other than those 4, or those 3 games, in every single power game, he's missed 14 minutes. And that's including an overtime game against Nebraska where he played all 45. So you could even subtract
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That's basically that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's stupid. That's stupid. You got to feel for Nebraska. Again, they led for 38 minutes. They looked like the better team. And then, like I said, Iowa took it from them and never gave it back. That got to a double-digit lead there in the last minute or so. Nebraska had their chances. Did you see what happened? Iowa had a five-point lead with the basketball going left to right. And they had the inbounds pass. Season on the line for Nebraska. Coming out of a timeout, they only had four guys on the floor. Nebraska or Iowa throws it ahead. They score, and that pretty much sealed the deal. Not your best moment as a head coach or a coaching staff or a team as a whole.
Whose job is to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Okay, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, they played 4-on-5 in that possession. Trying to go full court press, and somehow this guy just ended up open. I don't know.
I mean, that's like a drill in practice.
Yeah.
Where you got to break the press using 4-on-5. You don't usually try and break it 5-on-4.
Not in the Sweet 16. No, not typically your best avenue of action there. So those two games were awesome. The other two games, not so much. We'll talk about those, plus what's coming up in the Elite Eight this weekend. And I have a stat that the NCAA tournament might just be in trouble. We talk about that next as we're just underway here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking a little college basketball. We went long in the first segment, which we typically do, but we talked about the two fun games from last night, and that's because the other two games were not, man. Arkansas, they did what I thought they would do, which was just not have what it takes, and Arizona just looks so darn good. Better than maybe they've ever looked wearing the Arizona uniform. And then the Illini, man, that was one of the grossest first halves I've ever seen. That game was 2-0 for quite some time. Looked like a baseball score. And then second half opened up a little bit. Illinois played bully ball, and Houston in their hometown just didn't have it, man.
Didn't have a response. I mean, Illinois did to Houston what Kelvin Sampson and Houston have done to teams for years. Almost the Tennessee side on steroids of just, if we score, that's cool. But our wins, our true buckets, and what we ride on comes on the defensive end of the floor. And, I mean, what a gross first half it was. And a 10-point win for the Illini, I don't think shows how dominant it was. It was 15 at one point. It was 17 at one point. Houston tried making a final push with 90 seconds to play and made a couple of shots. But, my goodness, we talked a lot about this Illinois team and the excitement that they have when they step onto the floor. And I think for the first time, the country has truly seen what they have with that roster.
Yeah, so those two games, the late night games last night, a 10-point win, and then just a blowout for Arizona.
Arizona
over
scoring
Arkansas.
The most points in their tournament history, in their tournament history. 109 points, and did it with 5 of 8 from behind the 3-point line.
Goes to show that the NCAA tournament might be in a little bit of trouble in terms of the dark horses, Cinderella's, dramatics, right? This tournament has now made history already, and we're only halfway through the Sweet 16. With 4 more games tonight, 4 more games this weekend, 2 games in the Final Four, and the national championship game. Arizona's win last night over Arkansas was the 20th game of the tournament decided by 20 points or more. 20th game already of the NCAA tournament that's been decided by 20 points or more. This fact from Matt Norlander says that's the most 20-plus point margins in a single NCAA tournament ever. The previous record was 19 back in 1999. Blowout City is what this NCAA tournament has been so far.
It's what it's something that I don't remember if you were on the show with me or if it was one of the days during right around Christmas that I had by myself. But we did a giant playoff for college football, a college football playoff deep dive, in talking about how there were four games, or I guess a little bit more than that. But with the four-team playoffs, they had the three games every single year. And so you had 30 games for a decade before it expanded. And every one but like eight of the games were one possession or were more than one possession.
Mm-hmm.
And 70% of them were 17 points or more. Just going to show you the dominance that it has just been brought with these teams. And now you're seeing it even more so in the basketball world, where basketball was talked about to be the one to benefit the most with NIL, just based off of you don't have 100-man rosters. You're playing with eight guys, maybe nine guys max. But you're at the point right now where you're seeing that money not always have success, as Kentucky and other teams can speak to that. But the teams that choose to dominate and choose to throw the most money and put a lot of pride towards basketball, I mean, you're seeing it. All one seeds last year in the Final Four. Feel like you're on that kind of train again this year.
And in such a weird development, the bottom teams got better, yes, with the portal and NIL, but so did the teams at the top, and they just got that much better.
Feels like yeah, the middle ground went away.
Well, somebody says, and that's why we're expanding to 96 teams in the NCAA tournament. This is the fact that tells you that is a bad idea. That's a horrible idea. There's been more blowouts in this tournament than ever in the history of March. So
more games, Paul.
No, not more games. We'll take a break, come back, and talk a little football right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we take a break from basketball to actually talk a little football here on the show today. Auburn, five practices in to the spring, and figured it was time to at least check in, right? We're not the biggest sellers or, you know, hypers of spring practice, because it's spring practice and there's not a ton to go off of, but we do have at least a little bit, especially after the first day or two, right? But now that we've had a couple of days to see it and hear about it and talk to some folks who have been there more than we have, just because of practice being in the afternoon, it makes it tougher for us to get there sometimes. But the different positions, right, and the different guys and all the new names and faces and things. And we heard the other day that, and I think Brad talked about it with us yesterday, about one of the practices not going extremely well. Alex Golish having to address that and reset the standard, right? And he's having to do that from day one. Sounds like Byron Brown looks like Byron Brown, and clearly the go-to guy and the leader, right? Running back room stacked for Auburn. Receiver is stacked, but trying to figure out exactly what that's going to look like. And so there's a lot of different positions that are up for interpretation right now, and a lot of different players, I think, that fall into that category too.
Yeah, I agree. We did hear some notes about the running back room and how there's a whole lot of talent, but Jeremiah Cobb is kind of that ringleader, and I think that's rightfully so, and really happy that he gets to have a full season, at least mentality-wise, being that guy you're going to rely on. How nice is it that you have guys like Davenport, you have guys like Bryson Washington, you have guys like Omar Mabson and Alvin Henderson that are all in this room that's just absolutely loaded, and it's going to hopefully turn into the, okay, one guy graduates, the next guy steps up into that role, and the next guy works his way into that role number, that role B, which is what you saw with Auburn for so many years, of having that 1-2 punch to where when one guy graduates, you don't feel like there's that big drop off. And Bryson Washington being a number two back is shows you how good this running back room can be. You're hearing some good news out of the tight end room as well, with Jake Johnson kind of being one of those guys. And he was one of the more underrated pickups that Auburn football got. And we talked a little bit about him. Again, the younger brother of Max Johnson, who was the southpaw for LSU, then transferred to North Carolina. And so if he can be kind of that leader of the group with bringing the tight end position back to Auburn football, how nice would that be? We know that Byron Brown likes to dump it off to the tight ends and loves to use the tight ends in the red zone. And you feel like that could be a very big asset for Auburn, again, when they work their way into the red zone. So that way you can get six instead of threes, because Auburn fans know what that feels like. And thankfully, Alex McPherson is healthy and continuing to get better and better, because we know what we think chip shot field goals have looked like in the past.
Yeah, but I also think that that helps too, knowing that you have confidence in the kicking game and having
very
to settle
so.
For three, right? It, rather than it's like, oh God, here we go. All right, field goal from 47 yards.
Yeah, or
see how it goes.
Or fourth and six.
Yeah, what do we do? You know what I mean? So I think there's a little bit more comfort there, but yeah, and I think we've had this discussion a little bit too, but seems to have, at least for me, when you look up and down the roster for Auburn, there's a lot more confidence defensively with the names that are there, because so many of them are returning from a year ago. Helps that you have TJ Durkin as your defensive coordinator, who's not going anywhere too. You have a known commodity on defense that it's going to be okay, it's going to be solid, it's going to be fine. Then it all comes back to, and stop me if you've heard this one before, comes down to, can Auburn's offense produce the way that it needs to? But the expectations for that, I don't know. I don't know where Auburn fans sit right now. It is obviously late March, so I think the expectations for the offense in particular need to be limited. But once the season comes around, Christian, you know how this is going to go. Auburn fans are going to say, man, we want to have some fun. We want to watch this team. We want to be excited. We want to score. We want to have a chance to always be in the game, rather than three and out, interception, punt, first down, then three and out. Like, Auburn fans want to see some points put on the board, not by the defense.
How great of a problem will it or would it be, and can it be, if the biggest problem is, which I guess you saw a little bit after Hugh Freeze was fired again, I guess Vanderbilt was that that main game where you felt this way, but how great of a problem would it be to go, all right, DJ Durkin, we have to have a stop to keep a lead. Or offense is rolling, team takes the lead, or team cuts it to three, cuts it to four, and the offense is going back on the field, and you have full confidence in them to score,
yeah,
rather than it being, okay, please get a first down so it buys our defense a couple extra breaths, because that's where Auburn has been. And so how good of a problem is it that you bring in Alex Golish, who has the overall excitement, and bringing in Byron Brown, to where, at least again, on paper, what you've seen and what they have begun talking about and hyping up, and the expectation of what this Auburn program and Auburn offense will be, a great problem if DJ Durkin is the guy that you need to rely on to do his job successfully for teams, or for this Auburn team to get a win.
And offensively, it starts up front for this Auburn team, trying to figure out what that rotation will look like on the offensive line. Ty Buster has been the guy that has made all the headlines so far in spring camp for the Tigers. Talking about a guy who is just ridiculously talented, but someone who has to come along a little bit, but he's in there. Stanton Rommel continues to have a lot of buzz as well, and so Auburn doesn't know exactly what that's going to look like, but you have some dudes that can step in and play different positions, which is nice, and I think just some new names could be refreshing, at least for Auburn fans.
I mean, you got 39 of them on the transfer side of things, so you have your plethora of guys that you're going to be learning or relearning the names of. And some of these guys are getting their shot in the spotlight, because there's a lot that are dealing with injuries to where they're not doing full team practices. It's a lot of individual work, or they're wearing non-contact jerseys. And so it's a great problem to have, that you're having some of the guys in the two deep, or maybe even the three deep, standing out, getting extra reps, to where when the other guys come back healthy, not only is that making the entire team better, but it makes it to where you have to challenge starting spots, and also getting it to where guys can play more and more snaps, to where other guys can get breaks.
I believe Auburn is supposed to have their first true scrimmage on Saturday, that being tomorrow at the stadium. Of course, they'll have their spring game a traditional spring game coming up in just a couple of weeks. So that is where I will be willing to sit down and, I guess, decipher and give more thoughts, at least from what we see, not in a practice setting of an actual somewhat of a spring game setting as well.
The true evaluation.
Yeah, and then you can start talking throughout the summer of, okay, this is what we expect the starters to be. This is what we expect the two deep to be. Maybe here's a potential dark horse, right, at a safety spot, or I think the running back conversation, again, is going to be fascinating. Would love to see Alvin Henderson, Omar Mapson continue to make a name for themselves there. But that's when we can start having those conversations, I think, is in the summer. But seems like the vibes are good coming out of spring.
Very much so. And that's what you would hope, with the biggest news being at least no major injuries, right? Obviously, everybody is dealing and tweaking with something. But to not have any news, at least as of now, and thankfully, no breaking news on the Auburn side of things of major injuries. If anything, the major news is names coming back for Auburn. We mentioned it a couple of days ago with Chris Murray being or announcing his return. He was at practice doing some individual work. And no, I'm excited to be able to really dive deep into this roster again. And we did that last year when we were sitting there looking at the names defensively. You look at them again this year and the excitement that it brings in our little our annual draft that we have, where we just are able to pick guys, you pick position groups, and you kind of give a little reasoning. Can't imagine being the guy that picked the tight ends with the best hands you've ever seen as their wild card. Jack.
Yeah.
Can't believe you did that. That's crazy.
That is crazy. Have we ever actually gone back and reevaluated our draft picks, like, postseason? I don't think
we should do that if we still have all of ours and give a winner or a loser.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually done the second part of that. We probably should. That would make sense.
Yeah, we can go back and find it.
It's somewhere. I don't know. But, no, I think Auburn fans are excited again for spring. And you'll have the spring game with A-Day coming up, right? The A-Day week and everything going on. Several events and other sporting events going on. And so we shall see. I was looking around, too. We were talking to Chris Gordy yesterday of Locked On SEC just about major storylines around the SEC. Nothing major or crazy as of right now, which I guess is fine. Obviously, new coaches, new names, and new places. LSU will have all the buzz with Lane Kiffin going on down there, Sam Levitt down there too, and I mean, you talk about an offense that's trying to be revived and speed things up and become relevant again. Is LSU quarterback battle going on in Alabama? Kentucky, I still think, is one to keep an eye on, right? Can Florida get it turned around with John Summerall, who has been very present in the media, I think. John Summerall has, and I guess Alex Golish has too as of late, but just a lot of changes and things going on around the SEC in terms of spring ball, and then of course all the talking season stuff will happen this summer.
Did you see the quote from former Alabama defensive lineman now at Ohio State and the difference between the two of them?
No.
He made comments, and
I assume he played under DeBoer at Alabama.
Yes.
Okay.
And talking about how where he played at Alabama, he said they were bigger and a little bit slower, and how everything in the Big Ten is faster, quicker, the players are quicker, everything has to be more intentional. And people are taking that of an embarrassing comment towards DeBoer. I mean, again, you take that with whatever it is. And that's a player talking about his current team now, where obviously you're going to do that. And anytime you can take a shot at Alabama, your name's going to float around headlines. But
I don't even see that as directly as a shot at Alabama. I just think that is a accurate depiction of what the SEC is comparison to the Big Ten. One conference has won three natties in a row in this new era of college football. One has not. The SEC did it for all those years, and we pumped our chest and patted each other on the behind because we were like, yeah, the SEC, man, nobody's like us. This is the greatest conference on earth. I don't know why nobody else can figure it out. And now all of a sudden, paying players is legal and allowed, and all of a sudden, that has shifted north to Ohio State, Michigan, Indiana, rather than Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, right? Those teams have won, but Big Ten's won three in a row in the new era of college football. That's not a coincidence. And it really isn't a coincidence when it's Indiana winning national championships. Ohio State and Michigan are one thing. They've always done it. You let Indiana start doing it. You let teams like Oregon, who have never won it, and Washington be competitive. And those types of teams, yeah, something has changed. And it's the idea that they are paying players, and they're getting better players, and they're getting bigger, faster, stronger players in the Big Ten than they are in the SEC right now. It's a fact.
There's an article that was written 47 minutes ago as I read it. And this should make everybody happy on Friday. It says, three SEC football programs that were way better off before NIL.
Huh.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you can pick one of them, as Auburn is listed in that.
That were better before the NIL
before
era?
Before NIL. Can you give me two more?
In the SEC?
Mm-hmm. At least the ones that they have written.
South Carolina?
No, actually. I think those teams have benefited.
South Carolina? You think so?
I do. I think with Beamer, yeah. Florida is one of them.
That's where I was going next, was Florida.
And they have compared Auburn to Florida with personnel decisions and the on-field results.
Is Mississippi State in there?
They're not. I think Mississippi State has somewhat benefited as well. It's another in-state team.
Oh, Alabama?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They say Alabama, Auburn, and Florida are three teams that have benefited or that were way better off before NIL. Again, this is just one article from College Football HQ. It says the University of Alabama is the poster child for falling off in college football once pay-to-play became a thing. Since 2021, they've made several appearances but haven't gotten over the hump. They talk about the dynasty that happened. It didn't help that the basketball program's rise under Nate Oates meant that funds had to be distributed to the hardwood as well. I guess that's more just words than any sort of facts. For Auburn, it says, while the Crimson Tide standard dropped off from championship contenders to a team that either made or just missed the college football playoff, Auburn went from a bowl-eligible team every year to one that couldn't sniff the college football playoff or even a winning record. Auburn doesn't have the same problems with raising money that Alabama does, but the Tigers have fired two coaches since NIL became a thing, and it's really tough to pay players top dollar when you're still dishing out buyout money to multiple head coaches.
Yeah, we talked about LSU's dead money yesterday. Auburn... And that's what we joked with Chris. It's like, well, Auburn has no room to talk. And
no.
Problem is with that, Auburn was struggling before NIL. That was the problem, was Auburn was struggling down the stretch of the Malzahn era.
Yeah, you had to make up additional ground, and you tried doing that.
You were behind when NIL started.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You had to try and make up ground once NIL became a thing, and you then stumbled over your untied shoelaces not once, but twice. And now you're at a spot of still trying to recover?
In an era where you can get better faster than you've ever been able to do so. But I don't know. We'll have to see. I think Auburn has the talent. They've had the talent. That talent has not been a... Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Not talent, as of late, hasn't been the issue. Talent last year was not the issue. We said that going in, but... Auburn is finally getting some talent. Now you are on a new head coach, so you got to figure all that out. But it's a never-ending cycle. Pick your poison, I guess, if you're Auburn. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one right after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up. Hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get into hour number two, where we'll talk about the Sweet 16 games coming up tonight, plus the two Elite Eight games that are confirmed. And then we'll talk some Auburn baseball as the Tigers take on Alabama up in Tuscaloosa. So we'll talk about that all coming up in hour number two. But speaking of basketball, a little bit of news for Auburn. We'll probably dive deeper into this on Monday and into next week when we talk more Auburn basketball. But Stephen Pearl has done something that a lot of major college basketball programs have done. He's hired a general manager for Auburn basketball as Brian Kloman has been hired as Auburn's general manager. He comes in from Louisville. He was at Winthrop and Charleston, and he's been at Louisville for over a decade, where he was a major part of helping Louisville get back to relevancy. Remember, that was a program that was just in shambles there for a long time. He helped out with Pat Kelsey there at Louisville, and he's now coming to the Plains to be the general manager for Auburn basketball.
Yeah, he's also a Tennessee graduate. Time did not overlap on that side of things, but according to our good buddy Justin Ferguson, Coleman said the moment comes in life when you have an opportunity to do something you've always wanted to do, and this is one of those moments. Serving Coach Pearl on this staff will be an absolute honor. Working every day to make this Auburn community proud will be on my mind every time I wake up on the Plains. And then gives a thank you to the administration, the staff, and Coach Pearl for the opportunity. And so,
ESPN 106.7.
Hoping that can do what it needs to do.
Yeah.
294 AR Auburn Opelika.
That was weird. An ID fired.
That wasn't me.
Oh, no. No, you don't have a headset on. Yeah, an ID fired. I don't really know where that came from or why that happened, but...
Heck yeah.
Okay, well, in case you forgot what station you were listening to, this is ESPN 106.7, so...
Who needed the quote from Brian Kloman anyways?
Yeah. Also, here on the way out, there is some breaking news in the sports world that happened about 10 or 15 minutes ago. There's not a whole lot of information, but Tiger Woods has been involved in a rollover car crash in the state of Florida down in Jupiter where he lives. And so that's scary. Again, Tiger Woods involved in a rollover crash in Jupiter, Florida, according to the Martin County Sheriff's Office. No details about the crash or the condition of Tiger Woods have been immediately released. A sheriff is supposed to be speaking with the media coming up at 4 o'clock Central Time. So if there are any updates, we'll let you know. But hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We will talk about the Sweet 16 tonight and the Elite Eight this weekend, plus Auburn baseball against Alabama. All that coming up in hour number two.
WGZZ HD3 Waverly and W294 AR Auburn Opelika. Are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what's turned out to be a gorgeous Friday afternoon here in the Auburn and Opelika area. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, we hit on a little bit of everything. We hit on some of the Sweet 16 action from yesterday. Also talked about the NCAA tournament possibly being in trouble. Also some notes from Auburn football spring practice, and then
in a little bit of Auburn basketball news as well. So all of that was in hour number one in today's show. So if you missed it, be sure to go back and catch up with the podcast version of the show. You can always find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, we're breaking down the Sweet 16, the four games tonight. We talked a whole lot about the first four games last night, and I believe you went 3-1, sir, with the big-time win of Illinois giving Houston a taste of their own medicine. But we're talking about the four games tonight, the early slates, the late slates, and if they can be a repeat of a couple of the games from last night, it could be a Sweet 16 that is going to be a whole lot of fun. We're also diving into all things Auburn baseball with Auburn and Alabama doing battle in Tuscaloosa, SEC baseball because the slate is absolutely incredible, and just college baseball all within itself. And once again, in hour number two, shout out and happy opening day for Braves Country. I know that it's going to be a whole lot of question marks to get the season started, but still a whole lot of fun with Auburn, or with the Braves rather, taking on Kansas City here. So two power offenses when things are at their peak should be a whole lot of fun. We'll maybe hit that on the way out, but again, Auburn basketball in hour number one, Sweet 16 here to start hour number two, Auburn baseball, SEC baseball all coming up here in hour number two.
Yeah, so four games coming up tonight in the Sweet 16. Two of them last night were awesome. Two of them were dominating victories. Talked about that in the first hour, but you've got two historic programs. You've got several Hall of Fame coaches in action tonight. You've got Rick Pitino in action. You've got Dan Hurley in action. You've got Tom Izzo in action. You've got Rick Barnes in there as well. I mean, you talk about the old heads of college basketball who have survived, right? Who have hung on through all the chaos of what is college basketball. And I think that's a good sign for the sport. The fact that those guys have been able to do it, and they've done it at several schools other than Tom Izzo, who of course has been at Michigan State for longer than I've been alive. And so I think that's a good thing, and I think tonight has a chance to be fun. I do think, right, if you had to pick a game on the slate that looks like a blowout from last night, a dominating win for Arizona over Arkansas, or just the manhandling in the second half that Illinois did to Houston, what game on this schedule tonight of St. John's versus Duke, Alabama versus Michigan, Michigan State versus UConn, and Tennessee versus Iowa State? If one is to get ugly tonight, Christian, which one is it?
Not even with the orange and blue glasses on, I do worry about Alabama a little bit. There's a lot of people saying that they think that Alabama will handle Michigan, but we've talked about how streaky this Alabama team can be, and with how well they shot it in the round of 32, you're almost very worried that, okay, they made, what, 18 threes, it felt like 50 of them in the round of 32. What is that percentage going to look like here tonight? We talked about Arkansas and how well they shoot the three ball and how Arizona was able to take that away for the majority and dominate inside. There was a time when Arizona was shooting almost 70% from the floor and they were 3 of 4 from deep. That's unheard of in today's college basketball. You would think that Michigan could use that at least a little bit to their advantage, but with news coming out of Tuscaloosa, maybe there's another point guard that's making his way up to Chicago, Illinois, to possibly suit up for the Crimson Tide.
I've seen that get shut down today. The ruling is, yes, he is allowed to leave the state, but I've seen that he is not on the latest availability reports. They do have to release one 2 hours before tip, which will be in, what, about an hour and a half or so from now?
Yeah, I saw that yesterday's he was listed as out.
Yeah,
but
I don't think that happens. I don't see a world where that happens. Even with it being Nate Oates, whose reputation is terrible.
How weird is it that this incident is the most minor of the three?
Yeah,
this will be where the foot gets put
which
down.
Is fascinating because I've seen this come up more this season in the coaching cycle than I have in quite some time. I mean, does North Carolina really want to deal with this kind of mess?
Yeah.
Right, with off-court issues several times, and I think the incidents are starting to stack up, right, for Nate Oates if he were to want to leave Alabama. But no, I don't think Aiden Holloway, unless something has broke that we've missed or it breaks when we go off the air between now and when Alabama tips off tonight, yeah. I don't think Aiden Holloway plays this weekend.
No, I don't either, and I do agree. I think that it's starting to stack up to where Aiden Holloway, I mean, whether it's justified or not, may be getting a little bit more recognition than what is deserved just based off this being the third in 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. now of incidents off the courts. But Michigan, with how well they play, especially inside, their interior offense is very similar to Arizona's. And if Alabama doesn't shoot the three well, I think this one, with asterisks, could be the one to get a little bit ugly.
Yeah, Michigan's defense is legit. I mean, they were holding teams to 65, 70, 75 points in Big Ten play and some really high-powered offenses. Illinois, Wisconsin's, Michigan State, I know they scored quite a bit, but that Michigan team is just a different beast. And, man, you talk about an outlier when you look at the, not just the point spread, this one the biggest of the night, the biggest of the Sweet 16. Look at the totals of these games. Jeez. St. John's and Duke tonight, total of 140. And a half, right? The combined points for both teams in the 40 minutes of play for the non-betters in the world. I don't know why I know that, but I do.
Meaning 6.5, what, 143 to 137? Sorry, whoa. Don't think that's how that math works.
Uh-uh. I'm
73-60 oh, was
yeah,
where I
yes,
was.
Yes, 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 yes.
To equal the 140.
Right. So St. John's and Duke tonight is 140.5 is the total. Michigan State and UConn, 136.5. Tennessee, Iowa State, 139.5. Then there's Alabama, Michigan, 172.5.
Yeah, they're expecting the other three games to be played high 60s, low 70s. This game, you could see a team get into the 90s, mm-hmm. if not play their way comfortably into the 80s, if it were the Michigan 9.5 that the point spread says right now.
Well, we talked about it earlier in the show, but how about Arizona dropping triple digits on Arkansas last
night? Yeah, most
points
they've scored in the tournament and program history.
I mean,
again, doing that at ease from inside the paint.
Yeah, which I think Michigan could do. So I think you're probably right in terms of which game could be a blowout tonight, Michigan and Alabama. But, man, I'm so excited for St. John's and Duke. I know the Blue Devils are not 100%, but they seem to be okay even though St. John's is not a good shooting team. They're a good scoring team, which doesn't really add up, but somehow they've figured it out. And when you have a head coach who's a Hall of Famer, it tends to work that way. I think Michigan State UConn will be awesome. I can't believe people are not talking about this game more.
Yeah.
The guard matchups you're going to see in this game, the coaching matchup is probably the best one we've seen so far in the tournament. But we talked about the Hall of Famers. The other two guys or the other three guys are still pretty darn good. John Shire at Duke, Dusty May at Michigan, and TJ Altelberger at Iowa State. I mean, this day right here is some of the best coaches in college basketball, and they're all going to be going at it tonight. I think Michigan State is such a fun team, but we've talked about it all year, Christian. They will go as far as fierce takes them. I trust UConn and Hurley to find a way to, you're not going to stop him, but slow him down, force the basketball out of his hands a little bit. I don't trust the shot making across the board for that Michigan State team. I trust UConn to trust their bigs a little bit more and find other ways to score, which is why I'm going to make my first prediction and take UConn confidently against Michigan State tonight.
Yeah, you look at what Alex Caravan kind of leads this team, not even necessarily in points, but with the leadership. But Terrace Reed is really, really solid. Those guys combined for 27.5 and also right around 14.5 rebounds. You also have Solo Ball, Silas Demery, and Braylon Mullins in there as well. And so any one of those guys, because of what they all give you, I mean, 14, 13, 13, 12, and 10 on every given night makes it to where in a tournament, if two guys don't necessarily have the scoring, you can rely on some of those other ones rather than like what you were talking about with Fears at the point guard spot, who could give you 15 and 15 in just about any single game, but you shut him down or at least do enough to minimize it to where even if it's you force him to be the one to score to beat you and make him give you 25 and 5, makes it to where you feel like that leans a little bit more towards UConn's way. You look at St. John's and Duke. I mean, St. John's is at a spot right now where they're having to go through that 2019 Auburn type of run. Took down Northern Iowa in round one, in round two, Duke in round three, and if they win that, it's either Michigan State or UConn.
Yeah, it's brutal.
That's a tough. That's a tough test just to get to the Final Four.
Do we trust St. John's? Do we trust them to get past the athleticism of Duke? That's my concern.
Yeah. Physicality, I think, can match up, but yeah. It's the speed and the just overall athleticism of Duke that is very, very scary.
But Rick Pitino, again, being on the sideline, gives him an advantage here. He will find three or four plays tonight in this game against Duke that John Shire and the Blue Devils aren't ready for. And it could come down to that. Duke favored by 6.5, so just a couple of buckets there. This one's being played in Washington, D.C., so St. John's, hopefully their fans make a quick trip there. Duke fans are obviously going to travel to a game like this, but, man, I want to pick St. John's so bad because I like that team, and Auburn has seen that team, of course. We saw them very early this season. They have the size to compete. I just don't know if they've got just a go bucket getter when they need it. Bryce Hopkins is great. Sellers is great. Jackson can be good too in there. That's the thing. They have like eight guys. Duke's got two or three that you better be ready, right? The bigger Boozer, little Boozer, all that, right? We talked about that. Well, obviously some injuries in that category too, but I want to pick St. John so bad. I can't do it. I'm going to pick Duke tonight. I don't feel good about it, and I'm going to be sad when St. John's wins and I didn't trust them, but I'm going to pick Duke.
If St. John's can force the bigger Boozer to become a distributor, it gives St. John's a chance. With Eliafor down low for St. John's, if he can match the physicality and force Boozer to score going away from the basket or force him to be the distributor at the top of the key, kick it out to a couple of the guards who are a little bit streakier, I think that gives you more of a chance. I believe it was against Virginia. It was. Boozer had played 35 minutes, was 3 of 17 from the floor, only had 13 points, but had 8 rebounds and 8 assists. That's how you're going to have to beat this team. He's going to get you 10 to 15, could very easily give you 20 points, but it can't be the 25 or 30 that he can threaten for on any given night. And I don't know if I trust St. John's to do that for 40 minutes. So I think I agree.
Yeah, unfortunately. So I assume you're taking Michigan tonight to roll against Alabama. This is a game where it's like, oh, yeah, it's easy. Michigan's such a better team. Alabama's going to go cold, and they probably will, either to start or to end the game. It's going to come somewhere. Alabama's going to keep this within 9.5 points. I just think they do. I think they've got too many playmakers, too many shot makers, and they will run. Michigan doesn't want to, but Alabama will, whether it's to their fault or to their benefit. We're going to find out. But I'll take Michigan to win, but we know with that Alabama team, you've got to beat them for 40 minutes, man. You can't take your foot off the gas with you know, under 8 to play. You can't say, oh, yeah, we're up by 16. We're good, because Alabama can get back into it so quick. So I'll take Michigan to win, but I'll take Bama to cover that 9.5.
This is one of those games that Alabama starts hot, and it's 4 of 5 from deep, and then all of a sudden it's an 0 for 13 or a 1 for 15 from the under 8 timeout to about the under 12 timeout in the second half. Michigan has a comfortable 14 or 15 point lead, but it's everybody that's watched Alabama going, okay, Alabama's won for their last 17 from deep,
yeah,
and it's only a 13 point game. Michigan is then going to have to hold off a run by Alabama. I think you do that because this Michigan team is so well oiled that they can speed it up too if they need to. They can also slow it down when they need to. And I think once you hit that point, it gets to a spot where Alabama feels the need to rush just a little bit. If Elliott Cadeau can play good defense on LeBaron Filon, you force anybody else to beat you, I think it sets you up for success.
I look at this like a tortoise in the hare, right?
Sure,
Alabama
yeah.
can get out and run. They're going to get ahead. Michigan's going to stay consistent. Michigan's going to continue to do what they do and not shy away or get stressed because of it. And I think over a 40-minute ball game, Michigan's just a much better team.
Yeah.
So I'll take Michigan to win, but again, I like Alabama to cover. So we've picked, well, 2.5. You haven't made a pick for Michigan State, UConn yet. We'll do that when we come back. Plus, we'll talk about Tennessee and Iowa State, a game that could be ugly, but it should be good. We'll talk Tennessee, Iowa State, plus the two Elite Eight games that we know already and potential Elite Eight matchups as well. We'll talk about that. Plus, we have some Auburn baseball stuff coming up as well here in hour number two on the Friday edition of On the Line. So that is coming up in just a little bit. We'll take a break, come back, talk more Elite Eight, Sweet 16, NCAA tournament, all that and more here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Talking Sweet 16 tonight, couple of games to go. Plus, we have a couple of Elite Eight matchups already and then potential Elite Eight matchups as well. So we gotta move here in this segment. I made my pick for UConn and Michigan State. I like that Michigan State team. They're talented. They can score with anybody. But I just trust UConn's depth. I trust their shot making. I trust their defense as well to slow down Mr. Fierce for Michigan State, force somebody else to beat you, and I just don't think they're able to do it. But your pick, Christian, for Michigan State and UConn tonight, that's the 8:45 game on CBS.
Yeah, I unfortunately think that I'm right there with you. You don't really bet against Tom Izzo in March, but I also don't feel like you bet against Dan Hurley in March. And as much fire as we heard about with this UConn team early on, I feel like they've kind of gone under the radar since.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because they don't have those dominating wins. It's just kind of the wins of, okay, yeah, UConn won by 8. UConn won on the road by 6. Oh, yeah, UConn won by 9. But you didn't really hear too much about them. And I think that's just because they don't have that one star player. You hear about Alex Caravan, yes. But there's so many different guys that they can go to. And when you have five guys that I mentioned in the last segment that can give you 10-plus, that average 10-plus, every single game, that makes you very, very scary. I think guard play also wins it in March, but I will trust the number of guards rather than one guard for Michigan State. So I think I like UConn in that as well.
Defensive slugfest to end the night, at least on paper, it is Tennessee and Iowa State. Two teams who are drawn up the exact same. They're coached the exact same. They basically play the exact same. And pick your poison on who you think could have a good game tonight. Joshua Jefferson is the one for Iowa State and his status. I have not seen an update for today for Iowa State's Joshua Jefferson. Did not play in their round of 32 game, I believe. And so he had the foot problem. He didn't play opening weekend, I believe, of the NCAA tournament. Not sure what the status is on him, but
As of right now, it says game time decision. So he'll most likely be questionable up until game time.
Well, that's a huge piece. I mean, that's 16 points and 7 rebounds a game. So, and against a very physical Tennessee team where we've seen that come back to bite them just about every single year with Rick Barnes at the helm, right? Because they're not allowed to play that physical brand of basketball in the tournament. They'll call every touchy foul that there is. So I'm not sure, but Momcilovic for Iowa State, that dude can play. How about him? 17 points as a forward, man. He is a defensive threat, yes, but he can just flat out move. I like their guards. I don't love Iowa State's guards. Then you look at Tennessee, and Auburn fans know way too much about that Tennessee team. You've got one of the best individual players in the country, right, on that Tennessee squad, and you just look up and down their stat sheet outside of Nate Amint. You talked about Jacoby Gillespie yesterday, Christian. You also have Akpara in there as well, and just so many dudes who can make plays. I don't know. I don't know what to choose in this game. I like Tennessee's talent better than I do Iowa State's, but I also don't trust Rick Barnes in Tennessee. This is where they get to every time. This is the Sweet 16. Sometimes they'll get to the Elite Eight. I just don't know if I trust them. I think Nate Amint's going to be the best player on the floor, but I don't know. I genuinely think this is a coin toss for me.
Yeah, I wish I felt otherwise. But, I mean, when you look at the numbers and when you look at the betting odds, it's all but a coin flip in there as well. I think Taylen Lipsey is going to play a big factor in this basketball game as well. The guard that averages 31.5 minutes gives you 13 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists. But he is somebody that has really turned it on in the month of March. He had 26-10 against Kentucky. Didn't really play a lot, didn't play great against Tennessee State, but it wasn't necessarily needed. Gave a 20-4 against Texas Tech in their conference semifinal. Didn't play great against Arizona, but nobody plays great against Arizona. Yeah. I think he can make a very big factor in this basketball game. I almost think I like the individual play of Iowa State a little bit more.
Okay.
But I think I like the physicality of Tennessee a little bit more. And so Iowa State almost has to bump up their physicality to match it. I think they have a little bit more finesse in their game. And because of that, with the way the month of March is run, the way March Madness is run, I think I'm going to weirdly take the team that has more finesse. I think I'm going to take Iowa State for reasons that Tennessee, if they can get into the bonus and shoot free throws, but every once in a while it's a team that relies on the bonus a little bit too much. Gosh, though, I mean,
I know that's where I'm at.
You sit there and you feel like there's the pros and cons list.
I have 5 reasons for each team that I'm like, yep, that's a great reason to pick them. And then I'm like, yeah, but
what does... They average 35.5 rebounds a game. I'm trying to see what their...
Tennessee averages 42, almost 43 rebounds a game.
A lot of those, though, are offensive.
Mm-hmm. Tennessee does not shoot the free throw all that well as a team, believe it or not.
Joshua Jefferson is progressing towards playing more than he was. He attended practice on Thursday, but is still seeking the opportunity to compete in a very physical game against the Vols. The decision will likely be made right before tip-off. He's playing. Give me Joshua Jefferson. Give me Iowa State.
Man, I was hoping you would pick Tennessee so I could go different, but I can't bet on Rick Barnes. I can't do it. I mean, he's a second-weekend guy. That's just what he is, and...
Otzelberger said countless sessions in the training room. He's working tirelessly every day. It's going to take right up until game time. We're giving it every possible chance to do that, and he's doing everything that he can do. It's getting better every day.
Yeah, I'll take Iowa State. I'll do it. I'll take Iowa State. The winner of this game gets the winner of Alabama and Michigan, so keep an eye on that. We already have two Elite Eight games that are confirmed because of what happened last night, right? So coming up tomorrow, you have another Big Ten rematch going on in the Elite Eight. So the Big Ten will be guaranteed to have a team in the Final Four. Again, that's a conference seeking its first basketball national championship since the year 2000 when Michigan State won it. Okay. So Iowa and Illinois will play tomorrow a little after 5 o'clock. And then tomorrow night is Purdue and Arizona. We got a couple of minutes here before we take our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk Auburn baseball on the other side. I'll make this quick, brother. I can't believe Iowa. I cannot believe it. They did it again. That game, we talked about it in the first hour. That game last night was incredible for the Hawkeyes. And Nebraska blew it against Iowa. But that's a Hawkeyes team that had, I mean, they just had their sights set on making that comeback for 40 minutes. Their luck finally runs out. I said that against Nebraska. I'm saying it against Illinois. This is a different beast. I have been in love with this Illinois team since January, I think, here on the show. Give me Illinois to roll in that game, a 40-minute game. I don't think Iowa's got the dudes to keep up. And I'm going to copy and paste that with the Arizona-Purdue game. I think Purdue, they've been flirting with danger way too often, and they've yet to see a beast like Arizona. I can't believe I'm picking Arizona to get to the Final Four. This is the best Arizona team I've ever seen.
I think the Arizona team is the best team in the country, to be completely honest. That's why, again, that is with Tommy Lloyd, with all of those guys, and you saw what they were able to do last night, where I think eight guys scored in the first like 15 minutes of the game, and it was evenly distributed throughout the entire basketball game. And their ability to play above their maturity level as well. When Arkansas tried to get really chippy, I think Arizona walks away with this one And yeah, guard play in March. You saw what Illinois was able to do defensively and give Houston a taste of their own medicine. Keaton Wagner, Stojakovic, who you mentioned yesterday as well. Those are two of the better shooting guards that you'll see in the entire country. I think the Fighting Illini roll.
Yeah. What about Final Four quickly of the teams that play tonight moving into the weekend? They'll play on Sunday in the Elite Eight. Who are the other two that make the Final Four?
Oh, gosh. Michigan and then
UConn or Duke?
Michigan and, shoot, probably Duke.
Okay, there you go.
Nothing like cakewalks with all ones, baby.
Yep. It's almost like the tournament is heading that direction, huh? We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk Auburn baseball as the Tigers are in Tuscaloosa this weekend.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we flip to the baseball diamond as Auburn is in Tuscaloosa. Their third series of SEC play. Second one on the road. And I talked about this idea the other day about your first two road SEC series. It doesn't get more manageable than this, I think. Going to Como and then going to Tuscaloosa. Now, Alabama, as we have mentioned several times, has figured it out, and your road trips get significantly tougher from here. You go to Gainesville, you still have to go to College Station, you gotta go to Mississippi State, where they just continue to shatter attendance records there at Doobie Noble Field. And then you also, that's it. That's your road trips this season in SEC play, plus some of your difficult home ones as well. But what an opportunity for Auburn this weekend. Brad Law said it on our show yesterday, and we have been in the same mindset. Most of the time, when you go on the road in conference play, three-game series, the idea is to get one. We're not talking about what Butch Thompson would say. We're not talking about what the players would say, because they're like, we want to win them all, which is obviously the right mindset. But from the fan media analysis perspective, normally you go on the road in conference play, get one, avoid the sweep, and you're right on pace to do what you're supposed to do. Feels like this weekend's a little bit different, though, where we're in agreement with Brad, we're in agreement with a lot of other people. Auburn has every opportunity to win this series this weekend.
They do. They do. And you feel like one would not only be a little bit of a disappointment, but it would feel like a letdown, to be completely honest with you. And by no means are you racking a win on or tonight with Marciano. You would like to feel that confident, and you do feel that confident, but to be able to, if you get a win on Friday, the idea of, okay, you have to lose then both on the weekends, very similar to what happened against Texas, makes it where it stings a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Alabama has a couple of the players, and we've mentioned guys like Brady Neal, guys like Justin LeBron, that know how to spray the ball around. You have four guys that are hitting plus 300, plus 310 on the season. Just LeBron leads the team with 11 long balls in there as well. But Alabama understands that they don't have the consistency with the bats that Auburn does. And you look at that, and they've counteracted that with their aggressiveness on the base paths. Alabama is 57 of 63. In the stolen base category. In comparison, Auburn is 36 of 42. So Alabama, when they get runners on, they love to get steals. So they love to try and take that extra bag. So that way, it almost looks like an extra base hit. That way, if you do get that extra hit in the inning, it makes it a lot easier to scratch runs across. Justin LeBron is 22 of 22 on the year. You have three guys that are your primary base stealers, and you would imagine where those guys hit in the lineup to try and do it right in front of those power guys. But out number one is always so important, but against a team like Alabama, to try and squander rallies, because Auburn can easily keep up with Alabama if it's a zero here and every once in a while you scratch one across. But this Auburn team, as pesky as they are, the last thing you want is to be able to go down crooked numbers, and then you have to fight your way out of a big hole. Fortunately, with a guy like tonight and Jake Marciano, It hasn't happened yet this year, and you wouldn't really complain if it's you don't have to worry about that again here tonight.
Yeah, I was trying to find, while you were talking about Alabama stolen bases, I was trying to find what Chase Frelick's numbers are from behind the plate of throwing guys out. I can't find it right now, but I'll try to find it. But, I mean, oh, here we go. Hold on. He's got four guys out so far on what appears to be
4 of 14, I believe.
Yeah, 4 of 14. So not exactly the number I was hoping it would be. Be honest, the first time I've looked at his you know, defensive fielding numbers from behind the plate. But he's got to be ready this weekend. And Alabama will take advantage because they're going into this series thinking, man, if we do get somebody on against Marciano, Sanders, or Petrovic, we've got to bring them around to score more so than you normally would of, okay, let's see if we can string some hits together. That just doesn't happen against Auburn very often, especially tonight. Look at the difference in ERAs of the projected starting pitchers for this weekend. Auburn's three guys, Marciano, Sanders, and Petrovic, one flat for Marciano, 3.66 for Sanders, and a 2.97 for Alex Petrovic. In comparison to Alabama, with Tyler Fay, 4.06, Zane Adams, 4.11, and Miles Upchurch with 3.97. Auburn has a significant advantage here in starting pitching. I would like to think Auburn has an advantage in the bullpen as well. Auburn has also started to find a couple of closers that they have fallen in love with who have gotten them out of some situations and saved them in a couple of more. And so on the mound, I think Auburn has the advantage. You talked about the offense where Auburn has the advantage. So tell me why Auburn can't win this series this weekend.
When you look at Alabama as well, they have walked 84 batters in comparison to Auburn's 62. And
that's a big
22
difference.
Batters already this early on in the season makes a big difference. And if that's an extra base runner every other inning for this Auburn team with how patient they can be, it's a very, very much of a aggressive, patient mindset at the plate. You see what they're able to do when you string hits together, but you also see what happens. And although the final result didn't necessarily show against Texas, you had guys on base in almost every single inning. You would imagine the law of averages and just the law of talent, some of those innings, if this were to be the exact same case, it's going to be that extra hit. It's going to be another walk with one out that loads up the bases. It's going to be the 100-mile-an-hour ground ball that gets through instead of hitting right at the shortstop or the third baseman or the line drive straight to center field. All of these things, all of these signs, all of these arrows point more in favor of the Auburn Tigers. Now it's just a matter of, well, the age-old saying of that's why they play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go out there and prove why the arrows and why these lines are favoring you more than the team that's going to be at home, that is going to have the loud fan base. They're posting all about the FOMO, the fear of missing out, and how many TVs they're going to have spaced around the Joe to be able to watch, the basketball game. And what a Friday night it could be for the Auburn Tigers of the results of what Michigan is able to do and the results of what this Auburn team led by Coach Butch Thompson, who we have not mentioned quite yet, but shout out to Mr. Josh Donaldson as well. Being number four, that name that's going to be retired up on the wall. They posted the video about that this morning. And so really cool to see that the bringer of rain gets recognized with Auburn baseball.
Yeah, this Alabama team, only one loss at home this season. They're 14-1, including that sweep of Florida last weekend where God, they jumped on that Florida team, didn't they? They outscored Florida last weekend 28-11 over a three-game series, including that shutout no-hitter on Friday night where they won 6-0. This Alabama team can put them up in a hurry, and we're talking about the baseball team, not the basketball team here. And I look for Auburn to respond very well tonight. Based off of how the series ended against Texas, how you played on, what was that, Tuesday against South Alabama, where Auburn went in, just put their head down and got to work and got in and got out very quickly in that game. I look for Auburn to do that tonight in this tonight in this game and this weekend in this series. I think Auburn, when they realize, this Auburn baseball team in particular, when they realize that they are the better team, because they are, they're the better team in this series, they are able to flip that switch and do what they need to do and execute. And that's really tough to do in baseball of all sports because it takes a group effort.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just have the point guard flip his switch and decide, I'm taking over, I'm gonna win this game for us, or the quarterback or whatever, right? Baseball, everybody has to be on that string, and I think this Auburn team is. And so I look for them to get in and handle this and handle business tonight and this weekend. And how about this nugget from George, the Auburn baseball SID, says that starters for Auburn have turned in at least 5 innings in 19 of the 24 games this season. Again, starters in 24 games this year, 19 of them, the starter has gone at least 5 innings. One of those occasions was because of a rain delay to where the starter couldn't come back in.
Right.
So that tells me, and what should tell you, Auburn's not just getting good appearances from their starters. They're getting quality, above quality starts from their starters, which on the road against an aggressive Alabama offensive team, God, that's so big.
Yeah, silencing the crowd and being able to do that, not only on the offensive side of things, but being able to put up zeros, to be able to put up 1, 2, 3 innings to where next thing you know, you're down 3-0, but your offense has done absolutely nothing. You talk about the sweep over Florida. Alabama did hit the ball really, really well. Guess how many walks Alabama had at the plate against Florida?
I don't know.
5 in game 1, 7 in game 2, and 9 in game 3.
Good.
Florida walked Alabama 21 times in that series.
7 again.
Yes, Alabama got some of those big hits, but we've talked about, and it's what we started the segment with, a double to lead off an inning is one thing. A double with runners on first and seconds makes it that much bigger. That's what turns into crooked innings. That's what turns into rallies, and that is what Auburn on the mound has done such a good job of eliminating and forcing offenses to beat you with doubles and singles and home runs rather than 5-run innings because of wild pitches, because of errors, because of walks. And next thing you know, it's one of those 38-minute innings where they only have one hit, but they've put up 4 runs. Auburn's done such a good job of doing that, and they're going to have to this weekend to force this Alabama team to rally with hits rather than free passes, which they got a couple weekends ago, or last weekend.
It's a heck of a 7-game stretch for this Auburn baseball team. 3 against Alabama on the road. Then you go to Georgia Tech for the return trip in Atlanta on Tuesday before coming home against Arkansas on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Tigers are 4-2 in SEC play. Let's play the what-if game. What if Auburn wins this series? Right, then you go to 6-3. You're feeling good about yourself. You have that return trip to Georgia Tech. You'd like to win it, but that's not really the focus. We'll take that out. We'll just talk conference play. You come home against Arkansas, where, yes, they're another top 5 team in the country, but I would like to see Auburn respond and get that series win against the Hogs. You do that, and you're 8-4 in SEC play, heading into what is a doable, winnable stretch against Kentucky, Florida, and Oklahoma, the Sooners. I don't even know if they'll show up to the ballpark today after what happened to them last night. That was brutal.
I think that
Texas
shows you how good Texas is and how good their starter is. I think it also shows you how good Auburn is.
Yeah, no doubt.
With things like that.
But imagine that you're 8-4 going into that stretch. I mean, you have a big opportunity if you're Auburn baseball, and it starts this weekend at Tuscaloosa.
Auburn would be flirting with leading the pack in the SEC. Right now, Texas does because they played the Thursday game last night. They're 5-2 in conference play. There's a lot at 4-2. Mississippi State, Auburn, Kentucky, Georgia, and Arkansas. Oklahoma at 4-3. Florida 3-3. Alabama 3-3. Ole Miss, Tennessee also right in there. And then it kind of falls off of 2-4, 2-4, 2-4, 1-5, and 1-5 with South Carolina and Missouri. But you get to 8-4, even 7-5. Again, 15-15 in conference play. Although it was not what you shoot for to be in the top of the SEC, that will get you to where you are either hosting a regional or you're a 2 seed going to one of the lower 16 national seeds. But every win you get and jump that, so if you're 16-14, 17-13, if you get to 18-12, you're talking about a national seed to where you're set up to host a regional, you're set up to host a super regional. And that's where I feel like Auburn's mindset needs to be.
I think so. I think Auburn has hit that echelon of college baseball where hosting a regional is cool, but trying to host another super regional is what the Tigers want to do. It starts this weekend in Tuscaloosa. Tigers taking on Alabama. They will play tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. All of those games can be heard here locally with the Auburn Sports Network over on Wings 94. We will take our final break here on the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and plug some of the high school stuff we have going on, tell you everything else you need to know in terms of the NCAA tournament, Auburn baseball, things like that. We'll wrap up the free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. If you missed any of it, be sure to go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, we talked about the Sweet 16 from yesterday. Also, a little bit of stats about the NCAA tournament not being as competitive as it once was. Also, talk some Auburn football spring practice. It's just some generic notes and position things in the first hour. Here in the second hour, we picked the other four Sweet 16 games tonight, plus made our picks for the final four to get there as well, and just talked a little Auburn baseball as the Tigers are in Tuscaloosa. So that all on the show today. I go back and catch it with the podcast if you missed any of it, ESPNAU.com and the podcast center. And again, Auburn baseball on the road in Tuscaloosa taking on Alabama. All three radio broadcasts on Friday, Saturday, Sunday can be heard locally next door on Wings 94.3. And a little high school baseball going on in the area as well. I've got one tonight. You've got two this weekend, right, Christian? Tonight, yeah. And tomorrow?
We do, yeah. Lee Scott and Cottondale, a team making their way up from the state of Florida. They took on Opelika last night, staying in the area. We play tonight. We'll make my way over there here shortly at 6 o'clock. We'll go on air right around 5:45, 5:50 over on Tiger Country 104.5. And then a quick turnaround as that Opelika Bulldog team makes their way to Lee Scott Academy. They have revenge on their minds from last year where Lee Scott walked into their home and beat the Bulldogs. And so they would love nothing more than to make that return trip and beat Lee Scott Academy at their home place. And so should be a very, very fun weekend. Again, both games you can catch over on Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, that Radio Alabama app tonight, right around 5:45 or 5:50, and tomorrow a 12:45, 12:50 on air with a 1 o'clock first pitch. Should be a whole lot of fun, and just happy to be back at John Meals Field, man. This team went almost a month without playing a game at home. And so happy to be back. Winners in four straight, looking to continue that here this weekend.
Yeah, the Tigers for Auburn High, they took a quick one-game trip, and so we're right back at SEMO Field tonight. We went to Russell County on Wednesday, and 11-0 run rule in six innings, so that was fun to return that trip and return that favor since Russell County beat us back at the beginning of March. And then we're back home tonight. Pike Road is in town, 6A. They play in the same area as Russell County does, and so 17-4 on the season is Pike Road. So that game is tonight. Our first pitch time is supposed to be 4:30. It's now 5. So we'll go on the air about 4:45, 4:50 or so. That's over on 96.3 W Lee. But download the Radio Alabama app. You can find that there tonight. Just one game. And then the Tigers head south. They'll take on a bunch of teams down in the Mobile area region, right? They'll take on, Dothan and And they'll shoot over to Fairhope and Daphne and all those different teams down there next week.
So, down in Oysterland?
Yeah, down there somewhere. Down there on the – you'll see the water somewhere. So, yeah, this will be our last broadcast for a while. And then area play starts on April 8th for Auburn against Central. So all that coming up this weekend on the Auburn Network family of stations. So between high school baseball tonight, tomorrow, Auburn baseball this weekend. We've got more NCAA tournament coverage for you here on ESPN 106.7. Carrying all the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 games. So if you're out driving around, if you're going to be working in the yard, if you're going to be grilling on the deck, whatever you're going to be doing, download that Radio Alabama app. You can pull up ESPN 106.7, listen to the tournament games. You can listen to us. You can do whatever that you would like to do. And then coming back on Monday, we'll have the Final Four set. We'll be able to react to all the games from tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. We'll have the Final Four set. We'll talk more spring practice things, talk Auburn baseball as well, and my goodness, it'll be a busy week next week where Auburn basketball will be competing in the NIT next Thursday. Is that right? Next Thursday?
Well, they opened up as 6.5-point favorites over Illinois State.
That will jump. I bet that doubles by the time tip-off comes around. I would be surprised if it didn't. So we'll talk about that next week. Plus, we'll be talking, of course, Major League Baseball, getting closer to the college basketball transfer portal as well. And so next week will be very busy. But again, we appreciate you being with us here on the Free For All Friday edition of On The Line. If you missed the show, check it out, ESPNAU.com and the Podcast Center. We're back on Monday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Have a great week.